Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and it is great to have you here on this Thursday morning. A lot to talk about, a lot of weird stuff in the news. So we have a wonderful panel here to discuss the weird stuff. The Media Project just let out, so we have experts
recess.
Here. What'd you say?
Recess.
Yes, recess. Absolutely. So former WNYT News Director Paul Conte is here, St. Rose College of St. Rose Communications Professor. WMC's Alan Chartok will be here. He is here now.
He's here
now. Good. Excellent. He got the memo.
And he brought the bourbon.
WAMC's Ray Graff joins us, and the publisher of the Times Union, Rex Smith.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
It's
so funny that you did that, Joe, because you always promote the other guy.
Associate editor Mike Smith. Editor
Mike
Rex
Smith.
Smith.
Mike Smith. Let's start again.
So it's great to have Rex in with us because...
I'm not so sure about that.
Well, it's good to be on live radio because we can always fix it when Alan makes mistakes like that.
That's very nice.
Well,
very nice
working with you, Rex. There's the door.
I was checking my email this morning, and your associate editor, Mike Spain, said, here's a thought. If Rex is over in the Media Project taping, lasso him in to talk about the coverage from the Times Union on the terrorist death ray plot.
Whoa.
And so on the front page of the paper, in very bold type, are the words FBI death ray plot foiled.
Yeah. Don't you love that headline?
Yeah. This is, so let me just read the beginning of this, and then I'll let you go off to the races, because this is quite a story. A plot to design a radiation weapon that could fit in a small van and be used to silently kill humans was unraveled by an FBI task force that charged two men, a General Electric Company industrial mechanic from Saratoga County and a computer software expert from Columbia County, with conspiring to sell the weapon to Jewish groups or a southern branch of the Ku Klux Klan. A federal complaint unsealed Wednesday in Albany said the vehicle-mounted radiation gear was intended to be remotely controlled and capable of aiming a high-energy lethal beam of radioactivity at human targets. The concept was that victims would mysteriously die from radiation poisoning within days.
Right. And not know what happened.
And pay no mind to the huge truck. No one's going to make that connection. You know?
With the pointy thing out there.
The big whirring. Right. This is the stuff of movies. I don't think...
cartoons.
I think... Right. I don't think there are many of us in this world, and if you are not one, then I applaud you, but I think there are many of us in this world who have at times in our lives secretly wanted to have something like this that we could use.
The guy who cuts you off in traffic. Yeah. You know,
right, you know, and just and then they disappear. Oh, like you don't want one?
He has one.
So, yeah, he has one.
The NSA
so,
is recording this, by the way.
It's an unbelievable story.
It is. It is stunning, and when we first began to get word of this yesterday morning. Actually, I think that our reporter, Brendan Lyons, was getting word of it the night before from his FBI sources. I should say from his law enforcement sources. I don't know exactly where precisely he was getting them. I think it was a stunning notion that someone would actually, with the idea of perhaps helping the Ku Klux Klan or synagogues, which generally are not on the same wavelength,
no.
You know, the
well,
Ku Klux Klan
I mean,
often targets synagogues, but that somebody would actually believe that they could create this kind of a death ray machine and try to market it and not be stupid enough, not be smart enough to realize that somebody's going to turn you in. So what apparently this... individual, the major perpetrator, a guy named Glendon Scott Crawford of Saratoga County, of the community of Galway. What he apparently did was he actually went to a temple in Schenectady, Congregation Gates of Heaven, where actually I've visited and nice people there. They shouldn't be implicated in any way in this. He went there and said, can you figure out how I can use this machine and help me target the enemies of Israel and of the United States? And specifically, he was talking about Muslims, he thought. Well, this, of course, led people there wisely to say, we'd better contact the authorities. And they did. So very shortly there were authorities working on this. And so this initially occurred in April of 2012. And the Albany police notified the FBI just 6 days later about this inquiry. And by the end of May of last year, just 6 weeks after the initial contact was made, the FBI had a confidential source dealing with this, meeting with him. And so this led to months of interaction involving this perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, and a colleague then from Hudson in Columbia County.
Really resent because I love Hudson.
Well, I don't think they represent the entire municipality.
Still, you know.
So they, but he contracted with this guy, apparently. That is, Crawford contracted with this fellow named Feit, Eric Feit. And they together continued to hatch this scheme, all the while this being under the watchful eye of a an infiltrator from the FBI, as well as confidential sources that the FBI developed within the Ku Klux Klan, apparently, down in North Carolina.
Wow.
And I guess that is what is so just unbelievable about this case is that, I mean, it's one thing to walk into the synagogue and say, okay, I want to do this, and you think, okay, this guy's a loon, and,
sure,
and end of story. But then to take the next step and realize that this was actually under construction and they were working to build this device, and then there was some undercover work to actually try to sell them the stuff that was necessary.
That's a great point, Joe. And the question I want to ask Rex is there any indication that we know whether this thing was going to work or not?
Well, Paul Grondahl says no,
yeah,
right?
Our reporter Paul Grondahl, who talked to everybody around who is an expert in this, said it is unfeasible and far-fetched. And so maybe we shouldn't, therefore, be so worried about it. I mean, I guess with it, we were initially freaked out by the notion that somebody is running around here trying to build a zapper gun, an X-ray device that might fell us all as we walk down the street. But apparently the amount of energy that would be needed to create a device of that size would be larger than this building.
So they'd need two trucks, the death ray and the generator.
Right, exactly. A small crew.
We're sort of getting used to this around here. I mean, I remember once when I was at Marina Del Rey years ago, I get a telephone call from Galletly early in the morning. Dave Galletly, who tells me that the FBI has infiltrated the mosque down the street here, which is going to sell Stinger missiles.
Yeah, but Stinger missiles actually work. I mean, that's the difference there.
Well, that's right. But my point is that sooner or later, these guys are going to recognize that almost anybody who's coming forward to buy anything from them is really a member of the FBI.
You would think that somebody would be smart enough to just avoid that kind of thing. But here's an interesting thing that I submit to this panel of expert journalists around the table here. Think of the way that we carry right where let's look around here somewhere.
This is the other room he's talking about. Right,
so we know that these people. When our reporters went up to Galway to try to go to visit the home of this suspect yesterday, the home of Glenn and Scott Crawford, it was surrounded by a prayer group, people from the Barkersville Christian Church, who are where these people are members, apparently. These are people were called out to pray for the individual, not explained why. And so if these people are motivated by their belief that their religious belief that what they're doing is right, then wouldn't we call these? And this guy, by the way, is a Tea Party was a Tea Party activist. He's been a part of the lawsuit that has been brought to bear against Governor Cuomo to try to stop the SAFE Act, the Gun Control Act that passed the legislature. So, in another context, would we not refer to these people as Christian terrorists? Or Tea Party terrorists? Should we have done that? Because after all, we talk about Muslim terrorists in other countries. We ascribe people who are terrorists who are motivated by their religious and political beliefs. We give them that kind of a label. So maybe we're being too nice to these people by not referring to them.
Now, which people now?
The
suspects are the people who are
should we be referring to the suspects as Tea Party terrorists or Christian terrorists? We did not do so, but I wonder if that shows a double standard that we're willing to apply that term to people whose. And I'm just putting this out there to be provocative.
I think if you do that, then the double standard is on you because, you know, you take great pains and rightfully so. In other words, when somebody bombs the Boston Marathon, you will not immediately say, oh, this is a Muslim terrorist. You do your due diligence. We don't even know what's in this guy's head yet. So if you were to jump, make that jump without any knowledge of it, then it would be a bad thing.
But the fact that he's getting his funding, that he sought funding from the Ku Klux Klan, the fact that he was aiming specifically at Muslims because they were enemies of Israel and of the United States, it does give you a sensibility that his motivation comes
aiming
from...
Aiming may not be the right word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aiming. Right.
I want to avoid aiming. But it is, it's an interesting, an interesting point. But then also then to go, the first place to go, the synagogue, is an interesting...
Or some might say stupid. Yes, it was. It is surprising. It does seem to me that that he's trying to focus on what he thinks are the enemies of the particular brand of Americanism that he supports. And he brought a lot of people into this. You know, there are a lot of other people who ended up ordering parts for him, people whom he met with in coffee shops. There were a lot of folks that the FBI had to deal with to determine whether they were part of this plot or were simply ancillary to it.
May I?
Yes.
In the story, and I'm not sure it's clear, when he first went to the synagogue, which is the first place he went, right? Mm-hmm. Were they merely plans, or did he have, in other words, had he begun construction? So the question, as a lawyer might say, is he only had these plans, and then he didn't actually build it until he had an FBI mole who said, oh, I can get you these parts. Here you go. So were they merely just the crazed, you know, plans of a nut when he went to the synagogue and then the authorities were alerted?
I think that's going to become an interesting part of this case because, and it goes back, Ray, to what you were saying about the plot in 2006, the alleged terror plot involving the Central Avenue Mosque here in Albany, because the defense in that case contended that there would have been no such plot but for the intrusion of the federal authorities who kind of egged on and a confidential informant who really was pushing this...
which we call entrapment in some cases.
Which you would, yes, I think that would be, that's right, that was an entrapment defense, which didn't work.
No, it almost never does.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And so, but I do think that we'll find out more about that. They hadn't built a device yet, well, but there was clearly some of that going on then later.
Based on the reporting that your reporters did, it would be pretty difficult to construct the device.
Yeah.
I mean, they had.
But they were doing some testing, right?
Well, I mean, with a timer.
With
a timer. They could use a garage door opener to make it go up and down or whatever.
How dare you make light of this technology?
No, I'm serious. They had a control. They haven't gotten the beam, the X-ray. That's the more complicated.
That's the hard one to get.
And the more expensive
one. It's always out of stock. You got it. It's on back order.
But still, the Times Union got to put death ray on the headline. So, I mean, this is a... It's a win for you.
So here's the question I have for this media panel, and that is, why is so? What is it about this story that you know? I mean, your reporting has been incredible on this, but you know, you would think at some point every cable news station would have a satellite truck at this guy's house.
We expected they would, frankly. When we first started, when I first heard of this story yesterday morning, we all thought in our newsroom that this is going to be a top national story.
Yeah.
That this would be, and I think that what probably led others outside this community to back away from it is the notion, exactly what we've been laughing about, you can't do this. This is preposterous.
Right.
You can't build this machine. And so you begin to see these people as pathetic fools.
Yes, but it's still interesting, Rex. That's why I think, you know, if I'm a news director somewhere in Des Moines, I think maybe get that truck going because it is so insane. And it does, and it's, as you always say, Rex, golly gee whiz, Martha, look what's happening.
Golly Martha. We used to, this used to be what we would call, we always wanted to have a golly Martha story on the front page. And that was, you picture the guy sitting there with his Post Toasties in the morning, which sadly are no longer manufactured, by the way. And he's
nor is the word golly. He
clicks open his Times Union like this, and he says to his wife, "Golly, Martha, listen to this." So it's wonderful if you're an editor and you can have a golly, Martha. Mm. But you're right; that is a little bit outmoded, isn't it, Joe?
Well, you got one now.
I think that if I were in Des Moines, Iowa, and I found out that there was no X-ray, actual X-ray involved in this, I probably wouldn't send the truck.
Yeah. And I should point out that Paul Conte had that job. He was the news director at a
major not in Des Moines
station.
Ever. He sent the trucks. Yeah,
not in Des Moines ever.
So it it does make it a little bit less of a monumental story, but it still
but
is
us,
fascinating in our community that there are these people.
Everybody's talking
about this. Yeah,
that
absolutely.
This is going on.
And it did make national news, though.
It certainly did, yes. Yeah,
it was reported. I saw it on many, many websites.
It blew to the bottom of our front page, the stalling of the New York State Legislature, which otherwise would have been at the top of the page. Aren't we fascinated by that?
Fascinated.
I mean, I'm not a businessman, but I bet this sells more papers.
Oh yeah.
You know, the interesting thing.
Death ray plot.
Would hope it would be. It would make a little bit of a difference. One of the interesting things about newspapering, people always accuse us of, and Paul, you'll be familiar with this. People accuse you of making story selections based upon, well, it's just going to sell newspapers. A, as though that's an evil thing to sell newspapers, but it is a good thing. But the fact of the matter is, people's habits tend to influence their media buying or viewing choices much more so than an individual story. And so you're right. We'll sell a few more papers today with death ray plot foiled. Isn't that great?
But each of us who have ever had an X-ray taken. Yeah. Are now going to refer to this as you lie down on
the death ray,
and you see them focusing the thing on your tummy or your back or whatever. They're
a bunch of 11-year-olds in dentist's office who are panicking this morning.
Well, you're going to say, "Well, this sounds reasonable to me."
Yeah. Well, in every truck that's coming down the street, you're going to kind of look over your shoulder and think, "Have they perfected it? Have they figured out how to do it?"
Yeah, that's right.
It has to be three trucks, Rex. It has to be three.
Rex, thank you very much for taking the time out and talking to us.
Oh no, very happy to. Appreciate
it.
Chance. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear the NPR news. And when we come back, we will continue with the other stories of the day, which aren't nearly as exciting, but we'll make them exciting. It's all coming up next on the Roundup. Welcome back to our program. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff, Alan Shartok, and Paul Conte. Rex Smith has left the building. We are talking about many topics today. Yes, death rays being one of them, but let us talk a little bit about drones as well. The FBI has used drones for surveillance in limited cases over U.S. soil, according to the director of the FBI. He made these comments to a U.S. Senate committee yesterday. Robert Mueller said that the agency had very few drones and had used them in a very minimal way and very seldom.
So we hear a lot of this out of the administration lately, don't we?
What do we make of the use of drones over U.S. soil, I should note?
I got to tell you, this may be surprising, but there have been drones of one kind or another over U.S. soil for a long, long
Absolutely.
Time. Absolutely. These happen to be unpiloted. I mean, there's no human in them. But the police have used aircraft for surveillance, whether they're helicopters or fixed-wing aircraft, for a long, long time. It doesn't say whether they're weaponized drones.
It does not.
They could be surveillance drones. I know that it's a hot commodity that's come up in a lot of conversations for news organizations is to buy drones because they're a lot cheaper to operate than helicopters.
Interesting.
And you employ them for what reason?
When you turn on the TV and you see the high-speed chases in Los Angeles,
that would be from
you would use a drone instead of a pilot.
So how big is it?
They can be very small. Mm. I mean, I've seen demos of drones that are no bigger than this 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and they put a GoPro on it with a transmitter, and
they're like model airplanes. Yeah. I mean, people have been putting cameras on model airplanes for 40 years,
And then there can be more elaborate, bigger ones with bigger, fancier cameras with longer lenses.
So is what you guys are saying? That it's too late. It's all over. We're going to have this no matter what.
Well, you're having it.
Yeah.
No, that's what I said.
Yeah.
It's too late.
The barn doors. I mean. In the context of it being to surveil for intelligence, to create criminal prosecution cases, that does not surprise me. That's been done. I mean, how does the state police determine that somebody's got a hydroponic marijuana garden in their home? Mm-hmm. They go over with infrared cameras and they sit there because it gets hot.
Yeah. Do you think that there's any chance that the American people, now that they're informed that these drones are being used and to surveil them and maybe who they're with and who they're walking down the street with and all that, maybe smooching with, might be upset and therefore turn around and say, we're not interested in having this to their congresspeople and others. This is an intrusion.
Maybe. But where were they when aircraft started to be used? I mean,
The FBI director said that the drones were used in particular incidents where you need the capability, adding he was unsure how long images captured by the drones were kept, which, and I guess, of course, you get into the privacy issues of what the images are and what they're being used for, and yes, how long do you keep them? I don't really know what the expiration date, how important that is, as opposed to the actual... What they're looking at.
I think what Paul said at the beginning is absolutely important to this. It's because they're called drones, this is a big deal.
Yes.
But this has been done for so long. And really, if it's a criminal case, you would assume that evidence is going to be kept for a long, long time.
Sure.
And who cares, right?
Well, I think there will be people who care.
But
Ray, I think there'll be people who care a great deal. There's a point at which Americans cherish their freedom. And no, I mean, don't give me the look.
Well, you're off point.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, because this is a specific use. I'm not saying go over Alan's house, just, even though he's doing nothing wrong, and there's no court order for that.
But Ray, it just adds one. My point is, what's the tipping point? It adds one more component to this question of individual privacy. And I happen to understand that if you want to put a drone above two guys who are standing on the corner who you know are selling drugs, not a bad idea. Sounds to me like it's a good idea. On the other hand, at what point you get a bunch of law enforcement officials going, yuck, 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 look at that. And believe me, it goes on. And that is something that is un-American.
Well, I think that the issue is going to become more complicated because the devices are not restricted to law enforcement. They're affordable. They're not very expensive anymore. You're going to see a lot of them in the hands of private citizens. And that's where I think the privacy issue is going to come
Absolutely.
Into play.
And will probably lead to some kind of legislation.
About how they're going to be used.
That's right.
I think they're working on that. Because if there are 30,000, predicted, the industry says 30,000 of these things soon in the air.
But meanwhile, Congress has opened up the airspace so that they can be used.
Right.
Yeah, and the other problem you're going to have is if you start letting private individuals who don't know what they're doing just own one's going to get into the path of an aircraft
Absolutely.
At some point gets sucked into an engine.
And then somebody's going to get a death ray, and then
it's a really large drone.
No, Paul makes a very good point because we know that a bird has brought down an airplane.
More than once.
Yeah.
Well, the other question, I mean, to me, and you mentioned this, but the president has said that they would curtail the use of armed drones and operations outside the U.S. So the whole issue of whether these particular drones used by the government are armed or not. And I think that also, I mean, yes, there are the privacy concerns, but there's also, I mean, that idea of the government going around with something that is armed is concerning, I think, to anyone.
I think so. And we haven't heard whether or not they've talked about that they have them and that they use them. The implication is they've been using them for surveillance, but we don't know that for a fact, and we don't know whether or not the drones that are being used over American soil are or are not weaponized.
Okay, so let's just try to play it out dramatically. Somebody say to me, from the FBI or whatever,
right.
This is ridiculous. We should not have armed drones.
This is ridiculous. We should not have armed drones, Alan.
Don't you understand, Joe? I mean, you're a little naive not to understand that when we see something, a terrorist plot that is about to unfold, and we see that truck going down the road, which is going to be armed and potentially destructive, that we have to take it out. That's why we have to have armed drones.
So in playing that out, it then comes.
I'm just giving. That's not my belief.
No, I understand. Yeah. No. That was a little play. That was
very nice.
Very
that was a little playlet.
No, yeah.
Radio Mystery Theater.
That's right.
E.G. Marshall.
It had much more of a Mammoth feel when we did it in rehearsal. as far as playing it out, though, it seems as though we have to come to some, we as a nation, we as a people have to decide where we are in this, of what we want flying around, of what we want, of again, this ever-ending question of the balance between getting the bad guy and protecting our own privacy as well.
I think that's, when we look back on this year, that is going to be the overarching theme. I mean, all these things, from the IRS to the AP to the NSA and PRISM to this, this is going to be the year when those issues are at least on the table, although I think it's going to be a long time before we iron any of it out.
But I find it somewhat ironic that the Republicans, who are often the people who are, you know, for some of this government intrusion when it's on their watch, are now the ones who are accusing Obama of having gone over the edge. That's number one. Okay, so we could start with that if you want.
Not universally, though. I think there's a division there. Yeah. I think the value in knowing about it is this is worthy of a public policy debate.
Sure. Mm. And number two, I would like to just say that when it's a question of explaining to the American people, it's unfortunate, but when you're explaining to the American people, it's your safety. It's going to be your safety versus your right to smooch with somebody other than your spouse. They'll take the safety every time.
Right. But we have to start thinking about this in terms of who are we going to let operate them. And we don't have laws on the books to protect some of the things we are theorizing.
Sure. Yep.
You could have, you know, some 14-year-old kid could decide that he likes the girl next door.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got his little drone sitting out her window.
It's already been done. That particular story has already happened.
A drone? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Really?
Well, not a drone, but I mean, essentially, okay. A drone, a model plane,
okay,
with a camera floating over someone's house. It was within the last year. Well, one person did it to somebody else.
Drones are quieter and they can hover.
And then the question is the airspace over somebody's house that person's airspace?
We do have privacy laws saying that, for example, you can't put a camera in somebody's laboratory or something like that.
Right.
So this is just becomes an extension issue.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will tackle one other issue before we wrap up for our roundtable panel for today. We would welcome, we always welcome, your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us @WAMC Roundtable. We'll continue our discussion after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Blue Homes, building modern green homes, offering tours of their first New York Breeze house on June 21st and 22nd, bluhomes.com/Hudson for more information. Lakes to Locks Passage, the New York State Byway, supporting the Erie Canalway National Heritage Corridor and the Champlain Canal boating this summer, lakestolocks.com. First Care Walk-In Medical Center, Route 299, Highland, New York, open 7 days for the urgent treatment of children and adults, x-ray, wound repair, and medications on-site, firstcaremedcenter.com. And the Blue Marble, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring handcrafted jewelry from around the world, a world of gifts, thebluemarble.biz.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. A reminder, you can join us, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us @WAMC Roundtable. We're going to end with a story that Ray brought to my attention about a week ago, and we're waiting till a fine news professional, former news director,
right,
like yourself.
We were not able to do this on our own.
Okay.
Feel free to take it away, Paul.
So we held this for you. And that is media administration deal with conflicts. This is from the Washington Post. It's all but a journalistic commandment. Thou shall not have a vested interest in the story you're covering. Otherwise, a personal entanglement could color a reporter's neutrality or cloud public perceptions of fairness. An obvious area of concern when a journalist's relatives or spouse is part of the news. So what to make of all the family ties between the news media and the Obama administration? Question mark, asks the Washington Post. According to the news media, nothing much at all. News organizations say they've worked out the conflicts, real or potential, involving their journalist, but that hasn't stopped a few eyebrows from being raised. The list of prominent news people with close White House relations include ABC News President Ben Sherwood, who is brother of Elizabeth Sherwood Randall, a top national security advisor to President Obama. His counterpart at NBC News Division President David Rhodes is the brother of Benjamin Rhodes, a key foreign policy specialist. CNN's Deputy Washington Bureau Chief Virginia Moseley is married to Tom Nides, who until earlier this year was Deputy Secretary under State Deputy Secretary of State under Hillary Rodham Clinton. Further, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney's wife is Claire Shipman, a veteran reporter for ABC. NPR's White House correspondent Ari Shapiro is married to a lawyer, Michael Gottlieb, who joined the White House counsel's office in April, and the list goes on and on. And I guess I have two questions of does this seem to be something that's being picked up by the Post and is, quote-unquote, raising eyebrows because of the number? Because the actual act, I mean, you look at Andrea Mitchell and Alan Greenspan, this kind of thing has been going on for a long time.
Yeah. Yes, it has. People have lives, and just because one spouse or one partner chooses to be engaged in one occupation, that doesn't stop the other partner from having a career of their own if they choose to have a career outside the household. So it's not really new. It's existed for a long time. When I was news director, things happened. My wife actually worked at WRGB while I worked at WNYT for a number of years. We made it work. The home was for certain things and the office was for other things. Maybe I shouldn't say that between the two of you based on the last discussion we just had during the break.
We're all right. We're broadcast professionals.
Okay.
Right.
And you know, you just have to have policies in place when the things come up and present themselves to ensure that you're handling these situations fairly for all parties, the audience. We had a case where I don't think I have to protect names. Kelly's dad, Kelly Lynch's dad, ran for the state assembly.
Dan Lynch.
Yeah, while she was working for us. As soon as he announced, I called her in the office and told her under no circumstances could she write, report, or check anything regarding a story that had to do with that candidacy. Dan writes about it in his book, by the way. But we had a policy, and she understood it, and we practiced it, and it didn't present a problem for us.
And I think that makes sense for all parties involved. For the candidate, for the daughter, for the news organization.
But there are a couple of other things. One is the perception. I mean, perception is a big part of this game. And, you know, the idea that people perceive that it's unfair or that somebody's being catered to, even if you take those steps that you were just talking about, it raises issues. And the second thing is, I happen to think it's a very big problem. I would not be dismissive of it at all, because I do think the fact that somebody has a brother or somebody has a wife in it has got to have some bleed into the way in which leaks are given, people get onto stories.
It's an unfair competition more than
that too.
Yeah.
That too.
So is the answer that in a case like that, the news director has to fire the anchor?
No.
Well, okay. You know, interesting, in this later on in this Post article, Washington Post, they mentioned, and I didn't even know this, NPR's Michelle Norris, who both recused and removed herself from her job as a result of a conflict. She stayed on the air as co-host of All Things Considered in 2004.
Right.
But she refrained from reporting on or discussing politics when her husband, Broderick Johnson, went to work for Senator Kerry's presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had her on this station explaining all of that for an hour. It wasn't all about that, but she was on. She was very good. And I think sometimes you got to step aside. But even if you step aside, and even if you're just the co-host of All Things Considered, what does the public think? I think All Things Considered, for example, you could start me on my gripes, but right at the top of the list is, if you've got a book and you happen to have anything to do with NPR, you're getting national publicity again and again and again and again. That just shows you that, you know, that these news organizations are not above helping their own.
Hmm? You want it?
I don't know where to go with it, but okay, I got it. The ping pong ball is on my side of the net.
That's right. Over to you, sir.
Yes, it is something that you have to be aware of. I think you tell the public, but I don't think you can stop it.
The one thing I would say to Alan's remarks is I don't know. You talked about perception. How many people know? I mean, I read this list. I didn't know half of this was going on. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, some of them
that's
I know,
point.
But
do,
I don't know.
Now we do, though.
Now we do. But I don't know that I'll remember. You know, I mean, I just, it just seems to be, okay, I think Paul makes a good point. You know, you work in a town like Washington and or New York, and you're going to meet people, and it's part of the thing, and things happen, and, you know, there you go.
But you are so careful, Joe. Your wife is a major public relations executive.
Yeah.
You are always careful to never allow the mixture of these things, because people know in every one of those small towns who knows who,
you know,
the rest of it.
I think you make a good point, though, about perception and reinforcing perception. In other words, when Bagala went, what did he go to, ABC?
Yeah.
Okay. So there were those who already thought that ABC was heavily liberally biased and biased toward the Democrats. And all of a sudden, Bagala's there, and they say, you see, this is evidence. It may not be evidence, but it just reinforces perception.
Okay, yeah. But you have Madeline working for the Republicans. You have James Carville working for the Democrats.
Right,
you have
reporters.
Them married. Exactly. Well, they're both. One is offering analysis for CNN.
Is different, because if you're in the game, then you offer if you're a sports player, then you offer analysis. I think that's different. That's what you're paid to do.
Yeah, but this is about relationships where you have one party doing one thing and another one. I mean, the people jumping the line back and forth between politics and journalism isn't unusual, and it doesn't always work, but it does work sometimes. Yeah. I mean, Tim Russert was revered. Do you remember that he used to work for Pat Moynihan?
Yeah.
And before that, for one of our governors?
Well, and lawyers. Chris Matthews, and the list goes on and on.
So it's not unusual there. I think this article is more about people who are married who do other things.
Well, within the Obama administration, and this article makes the point that conservatives have suggested that these relationships may play a role in how the media cover the president, specifically in their supposedly timid approach to reporting on the White House's handling of the terrorist attacks last year on America's facilities in Benghazi. Okay, ping pong ball, back to you.
Mark Stein of the National Review says it's one of those I'm my own grandpa deals, which I think is pretty funny.
Well, this is the list.
Want me to sing the song for you?
No, if you would. Maybe right after the show, the mics are off.
We'll go out with that.
Okay. This is the list of people today. If we went back to the previous administration, would there not also be people?
Probably true.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, I mean, and if not, could we not point to, say, people who were working as analysts for certain organizations who were ghostwriting speeches for former presidents?
Okay.
I mean, so it's happened. But
in the end, it's transparency that is the only real answer.
Correct. You got to be upfront.
That everybody knows what's happening.
Right.
But of course, won't cure everything, because people say, yeah, you see.
But, you know, as you say, you know, you're careful. And I think I don't know that if ABC News has a policy, if CNN has a policy, if CBS has a policy, and you follow that policy, then we're good, right?
Well, not always. Things can happen, but I think you just, whatever it is, you got to be transparent. If something happens, if you find out that an employee of yours is doing something untoward, You have to be honest with the public right away. You have to articulate it. And it's a good idea to have a written policy immediately. This is what we can and can't do.
And right.
So that you can point to it.
And then in many people, we're talking about the president of the news division, so we're assuming that they're writing the policy in many cases.
Correct.
Well, when the late Don Decker was here, when he was at Channel 6, boy, he insisted that if anything went wrong, that his news organization was going to be the first one to cover it, that you couldn't put it under the rug, and that would be the worst thing. Wasn't there something about somebody on a lawn somewhere?
I think we were just talking about that, oddly enough.
I can think of another thing or two that happened, too. But
look at the time.
Yes, and we are out of time. I want to thank everybody. Paul, thank you very much. Of course, Alan and Ray. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from Solid Sound in Mass Mocha in North Adams. So we will be all getting together, except for you, Ray.
Yeah, have fun.
What the hell? Ray of hope.
Tomorrow.
Whatever.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.